Coming up on Patriots Today.
No. This is Knicks Fan Up. There's 31 other teams, Pod.
No, I don't think so. Christopher Harris agrees with me.
I'm going to wear my Patriot footy pajamas.
No. There's 32 teams. By the fans, for the fans, remember?
Oh, I guess so. Is that why Neil says this?
I've got to say that after that, I'm feeling a little bit dirty. I'm not sure about Greg and Justin. I think I'm probably going to go in for a shower. Maybe use bleach. Maybe that will take it off.
All right. It's Next Fan Up. We'll talk about all 32 teams, but we're going to really focus on the Patriots starting now.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh, it is a lovely day because I know you all out there think it's Patriots Today every time I host the show. Today, it's Patriots Today. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to have you here. Joining me is, of course, our Patriots superfan, Patrick. Hello, Patrick. Welcome to the newly branded Patriots Today.
Newly branded. Okay, I'm glad it's finally official.
It is finally official. Today is Patriots Today. I don't care what Justin or Greg or Neil have to say. They're all on the line. They're waiting to say something. But I will not give them an edge in wise here because the most important team in the NFL has finally made moves. As you correctly predicted, Patrick, last week.
What? Thank you. Well, I think it's safe to say that we knew last week that they would be making moves and that it would probably be happening this week because that's what they do. But I think what you're referring to specifically is I posted on our Facebook page a couple weeks ago that in the Patriots offseason moves, I think I had as number two or three on the list that they would trade Chandler Jones for a low second, high third draft pick or something along those lines. Bonus that they get a player out of it. I didn't see that coming. So, hey, that's great. We have some additional depth at the guard position, although I think they keep their two starters from last year.
We're going to get into that in just a moment, but I will now properly bring in the rest of the group. And we'll start with Greg, who's our Steelers super fan and Thursday regular. Hello, Greg.
Hello. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm just happy to have our favorite Irishman on the line with us.
Thank you.
I don't know if he was referring to you or the man in Scotland, which is Neil, who's our Washington super fan. Hello, Neil.
Hello, guys. It's good to be on St. Patrick's Day. We don't really celebrate it here in Scotland. We wait for St. Andrew's Day in November. But I would like to just give you a little fact before we drown ourselves in New England Patriots slush. I think, did you know that there are more people killed by falling coconuts every year than there are through shark attacks, which is not a problem here in Scotland, but it may be for some of our listeners.
Neil, I love it, and I did not know that. And now that I do, I will be avoiding coconut trees as much as I possibly can. Yes. Justin is our Seattle Seahawks super fan. Any coconut trees nearby you, Justin?
I think our nearest ones are in Hawaii, so the odds of me getting killed by one is really, really low. A happy St. Patriots Day to you and Patrick.
Oh, well played.
I like that. St. Patriots Day. It does have a ring to it. It does have a ring to it. By the way, we are joking. We will be getting to a lot of different NFL free agency moves, but we will be focusing on the Patriots here right off the bat as they've made the biggest splash, the biggest news this week. And we'll also be talking with Christopher Harris, fantasy expert, about some of those moves by the Patriots, but even getting more in depth on some of the running backs and the one player in free agency who has made the biggest increase from a fantasy standpoint. So you're not going to want to miss that interview. That's coming up in just a moment. We have super fans, new super fans to talk about. We have more super fan openings to let you know about that we're still looking for applications for. And a whole bunch more, so you're going to want to stay tuned. All right, Patrick, let's get back to the Patriots. You mentioned the Chandler Jones trade. He goes to Arizona. They get a draft pick, a second-round draft pick, which they kind of needed because they don't have a first round, although it is a late-round, second-round draft pick, which we already have. And they do acquire Jonathan Cooper, a guard who's not really performed up to his expectations. I've seen a lot of writings that say, well, maybe a change of scenery, maybe a change of scenery in my butt. Jonathan Cooper to me seems like nothing more than a backup fodder for the Pats at this particular moment in time. You talked me off the ledge about this trade. I still don't like it. And the reason why I'm not a big fan of it is because the Patriots usually trade our stars away when they're getting towards the end of their career, not when they're about to hit free agency. This seems to be a little bit on the rare move.
Well, I mean, yes and no. So Jonathan Cooper is a disappointment, and this is not about Jonathan Cooper. He's a throw-in piece, right? Chandler Jones is not a disappointment, but Chandler Jones is a B-plus player. Like, he is not an A-plus player. He is not Richard Seymour. I mean, Richard Seymour, I know you don't want to put him in the Hall of Fame, but I think he was one of the better defensive ends of our generation. And Chandler Jones is okay. I mean, he's good. Like, I'd be happy to have him on the team next year. I'm not saying I want him run out of town, you know, like some other guys on the team, you know, but the fact of the matter is they were going to lose him at the end of the year or pay him some obscene Olivier Vernon kind of contract. And the Patriots don't make that kind of mistake. So you can either get that last year of play out of him, which is not without value, or you can get a pick back from him that you can have as a low second round pick will probably be a contributing player for 3 or 4 years. That's what that equates to. And they'd probably take the contributing player because, let's be honest, if you're not just looking at the stat sheet, right, if you're actually watching the games, and I know you watch the games pod, it's not like Jones was tearing up the field for the last 4 years. He's a good player who ran into a lot of sacks, and that's good. That's how you get a lot of your sacks is, you know, coverage sacks or there's back end pressure and the guy rolls into you or you clean up somebody else's mess. Like, that's fine, but I never really looked at Chandler Jones and said, man, this guy's dominating the game. Oh, my God, why are they taking him out and putting Sheard in? That's such a mistake. It wasn't. You didn't see any drop-off in production when Sheard was outside of Jones, which makes Jones expendable. So do you keep him and pay him a high salary, or do you get in some rookie pick? Or better yet, do you replace him with guys that you already have on your roster? And we're pretty deep at defensive end. And then you know, take that additional second round pick and maybe get yourself another wide receiver, corner, safety, tackle, some other position that's of actual need. Although I will say the actual need in all of those things I just mentioned is depth.
Well, to stay on the defensive side of the ball with the moves that they've made, they've taken some hit in the depth as Akeem Hicks signs with Chicago. Silver Saliga left. He's now with the Seahawks. So that depth that you talked about is slowly whittling away. Now, I will add, this has been said to be one of the deepest classes at defensive line in this year's draft, and they do have the proper picks to invest on that defensive line if they're looking for value. Chris Long ends up signing from the LA Rams of St. Louis. I don't necessarily, I would still rather have Chandler Jones than Chris Long, but it is an addition. And then they get Shea McClellan from the Bears, who was a former first round pick. He clearly has not performed as a first round pick. And I don't necessarily know if he necessarily adds that much to our linebacking core. But in your defense, Patrick, because I know you're getting ready to say this, I had mentioned at the beginning of the season or at the beginning of this offseason that the Patriots linebacking core is one that I'm concerned about, as we only have two elite linebackers. As you've mentioned, you really only need two elite linebackers at this point and then fill in the rest.
I do think that's true. Going back to or front to back to address the point that you just brought up. Yeah, we could use another defensive tackle because we lost a couple of guys, and I really liked Akeem Hicks. I thought he was a great pickup last year and a real value trade for us. You know, I mean, for perspective, I think we got as much out of Hicks as we did out of Jones, and we got him for a fifth instead of a second. So, like, you can do those kinds of deals if you're crafty. But in any event, like, where do we want to invest resources at defensive tackle? That was our first round pick last year and our first round pick the year before. Right. So granted, you know, we had a little bit of injuries with Easley, but we're top heavy, you know, in terms of draft capital.
Come on, Easley's not a contributor to this team.
I know. I'm saying, like, I know. But, like, the draft capital, like, if you're looking at where you're budgeting your expenditures and, like, where you want to pay players, like, we're pretty top heavy at defensive tackle right now. I'm not saying don't bring in other guys, and we have plenty of picks to do it, and it's a very deep class, and there'll be free agents coming in June because of that deep class. So it's like the conversation's not over on defensive tackle. In terms of linebacker, yeah, we need more depth there. We were pretty shallow at that position last year, and it kind of hurt us. You know, but again, we can draft those guys. They're not going to be tough to find for guys that can come in and contribute because it's a dying position, especially a middle linebacker. We're going to be in sub packages the majority of the time. And you're only going to want two linebackers on the field anyway, right? And your middle guy's most likely not going to make that cut when we have two elite, you know, playmaking linebackers. Patriots linebackers don't really make plays. But we have, two really good linebackers out there already. You can take one of those guys off the field for somebody. I don't think so, right? So what you're really doing is looking for injury insurance, and that you're going to hit diminishing returns pretty quickly there. If you start bringing in guys in case somebody gets injured, you know, that can really play. You know, or quality depth, or for rotating guys in and out, or for special teams. And again, those guys are a dime a dozen, and we've got 11 picks in this draft. I'm sure we're going to pick up a linebacker or two.
So I'll talk about the offensive moves with Christopher Harris, Martellus Bennett, the tight end from the Bears, now a New England Patriot, does sort of harken back to the Gronk Hernandez days now at tight end for the Patriots. Chris Hogan also was signed away from the Buffalo Bills to join the Patriots wide receiver core. I'm not super high on him. I'll let Christopher Harris tell you why other Patriot fans should also not be all that high on Christopher Hogan. And of course, Donald Brown, who I don't even believe will make the roster September. But Justin, you had mentioned you weren't a big fan of these moves and called me out on Twitter. So let's hear it. What was so bad about what the Patriots did this week?
I mean, there's a lot to get to of things that I'm not a big fan of. And let's just start sort of philosophically about it. I look at these moves and I see a team that isn't necessarily trying to win now with these moves on the defensive side, but kind of on the offensive side. Except not really, and then you have very, very little in the way of draft capital. So to me, this, and I say this with all deference and respect to Bill Belichick, who, as much as I make fun, is possibly the greatest coach ever, this kind of looks like a lot of flailing to me. On the defensive side, Chandler Jones is a really, really good player. Yes, you have other pieces there who are also pretty good, but of every player we mentioned, Chandler Jones is clearly the best. And just a quick Seahawks hat real quick. Not thrilled to have him in the division right now. So appreciate you giving him to the Cardinals. Thanks for that. But you get rid of a really, really good pass rusher in a league where you desperately need pass rushers. So you're diminished there right off the bat. Your defense is taking a step back. You are adding a almost 30-year-old tight end to be your second tight end in a trade. And Martellus Bennett is a good player, but, you know, I look at the Martellus Bennett trade and I think, okay, Martellus Bennett is good, but I look at somebody like Wes Welker, who redefined his position, but because of his personality quirks was eventually run off. Welker was way better and not nearly as quirky as Bennett. That move to me has disaster written all over it. And, I mean, worst case scenario, they get rid of him after a year, but it cost them a little bit of draft capital. You look at what they have available in the draft now. I get that they needed to try and get some ammunition, but they have a couple of seconds, a couple of thirds, and the rest are all around 6 and 7. So, you know, maybe you can unearth some gems there, but you're probably not going to pick up a lot of impact players in that situation. And, you know, the Patriots are kind of famous for making a lot of moves with their draft picks. Four of those picks are compensatory picks, which you can't move around at all. And you're probably not going to turn your 2 2s and your 2 3s into higher picks. So you'll have a couple of mid round picks and then nothing until super, super late. I don't see any philosophy here. I don't see the team getting better at all. I don't see how this is a move to win now. I don't see how this is a move to win later. Maybe I'm just not smart enough to see the master plan, but this whole thing just looks super, super bad to me.
One thing that in the terms of the long-term plan, next year, the Patriots have a free agency situation, much like the Denver Broncos this year. And so there's going to be a lot of guys that they're going to have to re-sign, and they're looking to free up some cap space. So I can see the Chandler Jones move. And it is a position of strength, as Patrick mentioned, that defensive line. That said, you could be right. They are sort of weakening the defense at this particular point. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I was going to say that you said they're not building now and they're not building for later. I mean, there's a third option in that they're sustaining, right? Like this is an elite franchise. So if you look at who they're losing via free agency, the most significant free agent that they lost was a backup defensive tackle, right? We cut an underperforming wide receiver and we cut an underperforming backup tight end. And we brought in who's probably going to be a backup wide receiver, a backup tight end, who's probably a scrap heap running back. We brought in a defensive end who's not there to replace Jones. That's a coincidence. And people just automatically jump to that conclusion. This is like Chris Long is the kind of veteran guy that they bring in, again, off a scrap heap every single year. And sometimes that guy makes it out of camp, but usually not. I don't suspect he'll make the team, right? But where are they weak anywhere else?
That's a little
odd.
Chris Long is going to make the team.
I don't know that Chris Long makes the team, Bod. That's upside. But
yeah, you know, I have to agree with Patrick on this one. Actually, on my little notes when we were talking about Chris Long and Shaylen McClellan, I just notated they're not a shoo-in to make the team. And obviously, you guys know the Patriots better than me, but at least my observation is, doesn't matter what his last name is, if he's not up to snuff, he's not sticking around. So here's just to kind of zone in on one thing. I think that in the case of Chandler Jones specifically, it's not as though if he's not signed long term, you get nothing for him. He's going to make big money on the open market, even if you kept him for this year. And I think it's tough to argue that at least this year's team would not be better with Chandler Jones rather than Cooper and that second round pick. Even if you let him walk after this year, you're going to get a compensatory pick. He's a good enough player. You'll probably get a third round pick. So that room in particular to me is a real head scratcher.
I don't know, man. So you got to be careful with the compensatory picks, because we let go of the number one free agent, 2 years ago, a generational Hall of Fame player. And we got, a low third round pick in exchange for that. Right, with bringing in nobody to offset it. So what happens if we let go of a B+, free agent or pending free agent, and we bring in, a B- guy to replace him next year or this year? What's the offset value of that? Is it a second round pick? No, that's not possible. Right. So I'd rather give up the marginal gain that we have by having him here, right? Because it's not like we don't have a defensive end anymore. Like, we have another former first round pick playing defensive end in his place. We'll be okay, right? And now we get a second round pick from it, where we can actually pick up a quality player to help us out this year in a backup capacity, which is all we need across the board. Like, what do we need at this point? Like, you can argue we need another wide receiver or two, because it's always a gamble that somebody's going to pick up the system, right? And you might as well get those guys in the seventh, as far as I'm concerned, because there's likely to make the team as anybody else. You need a running back, right? Like a ball carrier, not like a third down back. We get like six of them, but we need a guy that can actually run between the tackles, and you can get them in the second, third round, right? Who else do we need? Maybe a corner. I'd love a corner. Yeah, but I always want a corner, and I'd also like a strong safety, but there are none of them in the draft either. So we're lacking a first round pick. And that sucks. And if you want to hear me complain about that, listen to any podcast I've been on last year.
While this is Patriots Today, we will not go into that deep, dark corner of the NFL.
All right.
Neil, you also had a few negative things to say about the Patriots moves. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think you have to start off by saying that As Justin said, you guys know the Patriots better than I do. And of course, it's always a bit of a risk trying to criticize moves that the Patriots front office carry out. However, as much as I think it's a poor move for the Patriots in terms of you're going to lose a double-digit sack guy and replacing him with Chris Long, who's, what, 4 sacks in 2 years? You're going to lose something out there. As much as I don't like it for the Patriots, I love the trade for the Cardinals, and I think that's a really, really great addition to their team. Going back to the Patriots, you're looking at... Well, the question that I was pondering this afternoon was, with this trade, just this trade, does it make you better or worse in the short term or the middle term or the longer term? And I would say right now for next season, when you're going in there with the NFL's oldest player at quarterback, I think this makes you less likely to have a Super Bowl challenge next season. We saw very much in the playoffs Denver's ferocious pass rush, and I'm not putting Chandler Jones in the same bracket as Von Miller or maybe closer to DeMarcus Ware at this point in his career. But I think it's a blow. I think it's a blow. But there may be off-field issues around as well for Chandler Jones. I think he had something going on last year. No, I would... I hate this media thing where they come out and say, oh, both teams are winners. I think that's rubbish, generally. I think that's just trying to be nice to the team you've got to work with. I think this is a win for the Cardinals and a loss for New England.
2 years, we're going to have a guy that we picked up with this draft pick on our team, and the Cardinals will not have Chandler Jones. And if they do have Chandler Jones, they're going to be paying him an obscene amount of money that will require them to cut other players to keep him. And what then that will be worth the value.
Paul, you mentioned a group of unrestricted free agents next season. Are the players there who would be more deserving of the franchise tag than Chandler Jones? Because you could have tagged Jones for 1 year, cost you about $15.4 million.
Next season, you're looking at those two elite linebackers, Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins, and you're looking at the two starting corners, Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler. That's just to start. So I think all four of those guys together as a group are more important than holding on to Chandler Jones.
I would not put Logan Ryan in that group, but yeah.
No, I wouldn't either. He's more.
Yeah. Can I add in two important points I haven't heard anyone talk about yet?
Hit it.
First point is, you guys are all expecting Chandler Jones not to be suspended or not to have accrued another strike. And speaking from a guy who his players apparently love to get suspended every offseason. I mean, Chandler Jones going missing in mid-January and then ending up in the emergency room, I think that has to play into this trade a little bit. He's not the squeaky clean guy that might be active the entire season or might be active going, you know, a couple years down the road. He's not the type of guy hearing that sort of report that I want to give a lot of money to. And then also you add in that his brother apparently has some type of drug problems with Indianapolis. Is there a bigger problem going on that, you know, we don't know about any of that stuff? So that's my point on Chandler Jones. I think his value is drastically reduced, at least in the Patriots' eyes, because they actually know all those details. And the second point is getting Bennett for a 4th-round draft pick, I think, was a great value because Gronk is the franchise as much as Brady is. And they didn't have anyone else on the roster that could replace Gronk for 4 or 5 games, which almost was their Achilles heel last year. And now for a 4th-round draft pick that might not even make their roster. I know this past year the Steelers, for instance, cut their 4th-round draft pick out of camp. So I thought it was a very, you know, cost-effective move for them to ensure their franchise.
Yeah, and for giving up that 4th-round pick, we also got yet another 6th-round pick. I mean, that's like, what, 4, 5, 6-round picks we have now? That's a lot of Tom Brady.
And to add Tom, our Bears superfan perspective on that, we acquired James Bostic, the linebacker from the Bears, towards the end of last season, and that was a 6th-round pick. So we essentially received our 6th-rounder back from the Bears and got Bostic and Bennett for our 4th. That's not too bad.
That's true.
Bennett probably plays into Greg's first point around the off-field issues. That guy's as crazy as a sack full of ferrets, I think. He's had a lot of problems, hasn't he?
I absolutely love the Bennett brothers. Absolutely do. Let me go on the record of saying this is the worst possible landing space for one of them. And when we look back, I will say I told you so when the Bennett move in particular is a disaster.
Why?
Because of the organization and the players.
Possible.
Such a bad fit.
Oh, because we're strict and they don't like strict?
Yeah, the Bennett brothers in particular. And I love them to death. I would happily have Martellus here in Seattle. But the worst possible fit is New England for him.
Yeah, he's shining, I think.
We went much longer than I had expected on the New England Patriots. And we've got more to come here with Christopher Harris. So why don't I talk to Chris here, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show. And it is my pleasure now to bring in the FSWA Fantasy Podcast of the Year host, Christopher Harris, who hosts the Harris Football Podcast, which you can find wherever you listen to your fine podcasts, all over the place, especially on iTunes. Hello, Christopher Harris. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I'm really happy to be back.
Congrats on the award. That's a big one.
Yeah. Unexpected. I mean, ridiculous. You know, as of like July 15th of last year, the show didn't exist. It's a testament to the listeners. I am lucky to have a listenership that is really enthused and involved, and they make songs. You know, we play songs on the show that listeners make, and it's a very loyal bunch. I'm very lucky.
I have yet to have fans make songs for this podcast, but if you're listening, fans out there who like to make songs, we will gladly take them. Piano Ballad Vinny, I believe you're listening right now. I expect a song. Chris, I didn't just have you on here to talk about songs. I had you on here because I noticed that you were doing some off-season shows around free agency, and lo and behold, we have lots of free agency stuff to talk about. So I want to talk about some fantasy impact for some of these free agent moves. And let's start with the Patriots, because it is Patriots today. And they just got themselves a dual threat tight end to go along with their Rob Gronkowski.
Right. Yeah. Martellus Bennett, a fairly inexpensive investment. I think from a football perspective, you say, wow, the Patriots, you mean the Patriots like gave up a draft asset and got a player as opposed to vice versa. I think for fantasy, anticipating that it's going to be the Gronk and Hernandez show again is maybe a little aggressive, but in a landscape where tight ends kind of stink and we don't really like them, and you know, week to week they sort of punish you, this certainly wouldn't make me leave Gronk as the number one tight end by any stretch, but I would imagine, and not having really done official ranks yet, I think I'm going to have Martellus Bennett in my top 10, you know, sorts of the bottom reaches of the top 10. In most fantasy leagues, tight end scarcity, not an issue. And so, you know, you can afford to take a shot on a high upside guy like Bennett could be in this offense, you know, if they kind of harken back, whatever, 5 years ago. And if it doesn't work out and he frustrates you, he's Scott Chandler or whatever, it doesn't matter because you can go get someone else.
You know, I once famously said Chris Baker on the New England Patriots was going to be a touchdown maker. It didn't turn out. I also was big on, some other tight end who also didn't turn out. We thought it was the second coming of Gronk. But I do fear, in terms of Gronk, that Bennett will be a little bit of a touchdown vulture here.
There's a potential for it on a week-to-week basis. Maybe more than anything, because we know that the Patriots like to use Gronkowski as a blocker, and they haven't had that second tight end to be a real, you know, sort of mid-range receiver threat. They've tried. Heavens knows they tried Scott Chandler last year. You know, too many times, for my taste, you would see Gronk blocking and Chandler in a pass pattern, and that, you know, in theory, I guess that could work, but it didn't because Scott Chandler can't catch. Martellus Bennett can. However, he is an emotional guy. He is entering the final year of his contract. There's certainly potential for this to not work out at all from a human resources standpoint. And that's the kind of thing that we're not going to know until it does or doesn't work out. And then we'll be able to retrofit a narrative for why it did. But I think, listen, if Gronk goes from the upside of 18 touchdowns to the upside of 15 touchdowns, I can live with it.
Mm. And listen, as long as he doesn't go and murder a guy, I think Bennett will be just fine. staying with the Patriots in the long line of Wes Welker replacement wannabes, and I start with Julian Edelman and then Danny Amendola. We now add Chris Hogan to the group. Having watched him last year eat the Patriots alive and make some lunch, this fits totally in what the Patriots like to do in terms of stealing guys from their division rivals. I just don't know if Chris Hogan is really that Wes Welker type of guy. What do you think?
Oh, he's not. I think anybody who's kind of trying to say he's a slot receiver, a little scat guy, he's 6'1", 215, 220 pounds. He's there to be Brandon LaFell. He is not there to be Wes Welker or Julian Edelman or Danny Amendola. And I did go back and for my show do a bunch of film study on Hogan from this past season, and I watched all his targets in that Patriot game. And one of the big plays in that game was this play where he looks phenomenal, like really getting separation from the defensive back. And I just squint. Oh, that's Pat Chung. I got it. Okay. So, Chris Hogan's not someone who's going to face Patrick Peterson and look good, and he's rarely going, listen, we know the Brandon LaFell story. There were weeks where an opposing defense decided, we know LaFell's going to get three or four targets, but we're cool putting our better guys on the slot guys. You see Revis moving inside some, right? But then you see some defenses that just say, no, we do what we do. Our best guy's staying on the outside. And those are going to be games where Chris Hogan's not going to ever sniff the ball. And so I think he is Brandon LaFell-esque role. Unfortunately, I think he has some of the same problems as Brandon LaFell. He might be a little bit faster in terms of foot speed, not the leaper or the sort of overall athlete that Brandon LaFell is, but hands problems. I think he was credited for 5 drops, and just watching, I watched every target, just in prepping for my show that he got all year, I think he should have been credited for more. I think there are some shaky hands there. From a football perspective, it would be awesome to see the Patriots have an outside threat that I trusted and, thought a lot of. Hogan is kind of not it. I think from a fantasy perspective, he has upside because, listen, the second half of 2014, Brandon LaFell was really useful for fantasy, but my guess is it probably doesn't work out in his favor.
And the last note on the Patriots, Donald Brown, does he even make the team?
I don't think so. I think it's just one of those dartboard type players, and my guess is he doesn't make the team.
I'm totally on board with that. Who in free agency right now has done the most in terms of their fantasy upside?
The initial impulse is to say the Texans, because you don't see too many NFL teams that get a new quarterback and a new running back in the same offseason. I tend to be a little skeptical of hastily assembled dream teams, as it were. I go back to the 2011 Eagles, where they got everyone, Ronnie Brown and Vince Young and Nnamdi Asamoah and, lots of other guys I'm not thinking of, and, it all blew up. And so I want to, be relatively circumspect about endorsing the Texans, but, I think you would say, I think Osweiler has a heck of a lot more promise than anybody else they had there playing quarterback, and so that's good for DeAndre Hopkins. I'm not the biggest Lamar Miller fan in the world, but I've had experts on my show who've said they think he's they're in with both feet. They think he's a first round draft pick for fantasy. I don't think I'm going to go there, but I understand why. I would probably say the Texans have made the splashiest splashes.
I'm glad you brought up the Texans, because we do have this question from Greg, who's our Steelers super fan, who thinks he's worried about what the real impact of Brock Osweiler is for the Texans, and even wonders if DeAndre Hopkins could see a production drop. As he puts it, he doesn't necessarily see that big a difference between Brock and Brian Hoyer. I don't know if I'm on the same page with him, but that's his question.
I see a big upgrade. I think it's a legitimately big upgrade. Is Osweiler, for me, what Osweiler can be is Joe Flacco. I think he's got all the arm you would ever want, and Brian Hoyer does not. I'm going to wear my Patriot footy pajamas, as I say on the show all the time, and go back to that Sunday night game when Osweiler had to lead the late drive to you know, get the lead, actually, and wind up, you know, the Patriots saved themselves and went to overtime and made two throws down each respective sideline. And the one to Emmanuel Sanders is a big boy throw. I mean, that's 50 yards in the air all the way to the sideline on a rope. Tom Brady doesn't have that in his bag anymore. You know, heaven knows Peyton Manning didn't have it in his bag anymore. There are a lot of guys who can make that throw. I think Osweiler's arm strength is underrated. He's not on the level of Flacco or Matthew Stafford, but it's really good. It's above average. And pocket presence and stuff like that, for sure, there are question marks. You know, I think that's where the Joe Flacco comparison kind of works, because Flacco is the guy who gets on the runs, both a positive and negative. You know, I think he'll look awesome for a quarter and then lost for two quarters and then come back and save the Ravens bacon in the last. And for me, that's probably what Osweiler's upside is. And the truth is in this landscape of NFL, I think a lot of teams would probably sign up for that. Of course, then you wind up having to pay them ridiculous money. I mean, Osweiler didn't get Flacco money, and that ruins your team's salary cap. But no, I view this as, if nothing else, it's a push for Hopkins, and I'm tempted to say it's probably an upgrade until we find out what they're going to do opposite him. Because if they spend a first round pick on Corey Coleman, you know, there's a potential for a little more even distribution among the wide receivers.
Right. Staying with Greg's got another question. What over 28 running back do you like the best for this coming year? He listed a bunch. Would you like his list?
I don't have formal running back ranks, but you could, prompt me and I'll probably be able to help you.
All right. So his list includes Matt Forte, Jamal Charles, Arian Foster, DeMarco Murray, Adrian Peterson, Rashad Jennings, CJ. I'm guessing that's either Chris Johnson or CJ Anderson.
It's
starts.
Yeah. I mean, I think Peterson should probably be disqualified from this. I think Peterson should probably be the one or the two pick in all leagues. Yes, Adrian Peterson is the one. I mean, I just did on my show this week, I did my assessment of the 10 most talented running backs in the NFL as of this moment, as watching their film from 2015. And spoiler alert, Peterson comes out number one. He is still sick. I mean, he is still awesome, unbelievably good, and still the legs of a giant, and, you know, just does impossible things that no other running back does. And I admit there's a cliff coming, you know, for everybody. There's a cliff coming for us too, buddy. But, I'm going to probably try to ride that Peterson train for as long as I can. If I'm going to rule him out, I think I probably say Jamal Charles. We have a long way to go to find out about the ACL. You know, the last time he tore an ACL, he came back fine, but, you know, he's going to be 30 and, you know, it doesn't get easier to heal up. I think Matt Forte has a potential to be value, but then again, we're in March and it's not till September. And I'm probably going to say that so many times between now and then that he won't have value anymore. But, Charles is the one. Or I would say, listen, if you spent Pearson's out of this conversation, Charles is the one where if we said someone's going to spend a mid to late first round pick and took Jamal Charles, I would not at all be upset.
Which brings us to James, who's our Texan super fan. He's got a couple of questions that are related. I'll start with the running back specific one. What impactful running back from last year will owners regret relying on as a number one? He mentions Todd Gurley, Thomas Rawls, Mark Ingram, Jonathan Stewart.
He didn't get mine. Mine would be Devontae Freeman. There are going to be people who take Devontae Freeman in the first round. And I'm not a believer, even though I acknowledge I wasn't right, you know, as he was doing well and I kept predicting doom. You know, in the end, he gets hurt and he comes back and he isn't as good, but he was still okay. You know, I still thought his film was okay. I just don't think he is a special player. I don't think he should have been a touchdown maker like he was early last year. I'm not a huge believer in players that size. You know, I think they get hurt and I think they get platoon backs. You know, I still wouldn't be shocked if Alfred Morris wound up in Atlanta and then maybe people would start thinking differently about his touchdowns. Well, I just sort of connecting the dots. You know, Morris isn't going to make a ton of money, and Kyle Shanahan's the offensive coordinator who had him in Washington, very much you know me, not at all an insider. Right. I'm not making phone calls and finding out, you know, the actual dirt. But I'm just connecting dots and thinking I wouldn't be shocked if they got a veteran bigger back, because Devontae Freeman, in my way of thinking, is just too small to make it as a feature back.
Well, I'm just thinking of Tevin Coleman there as well.
Sure, you know, I was okay with Tevin Coleman early in the season, and then I watched him the rest of the season, and he was, you know, he had flashes. He would make a good play. The problem was he would fumble at the end of that good play. You know, you have what the potential for a really good offensive line in Atlanta. You know, your call on Atlanta making the playoffs last year may wind up being just a year too late, and it's going to look pretty smart in retrospect. You know, they signed Alex Mack, probably the best center that's been on the free agent market for a while, and they retained a guard who's really important, and you know, I think it's a good line. And it looked like a good line when Devontae Freeman ran. It didn't look as good when Tevin Coleman ran, unfortunately.
You had to remind me of my boyfriends, my ex-boyfriends of last year. The other question from James that was related to our running back conversation, what player from last year that missed some or all of the season will be a quote-unquote steal? And who's going to go too high?
Okay. Well, I don't know who missed last year. Did Le'Veon Bell, does he count?
Sure.
I think, you know, I don't know what the status of Le'Veon Bell is, right? Because that torn PCL, we hear from the people who know, can be something that's worse than a torn ACL or not, right? And we're really not going to know. Unfortunately, we're really not going to know until the games that count start, because, you know, we're just going to hear blah, 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 how good he feels for, you know, months and months, and how ahead of schedule he is, because no one in the world in the history of the NFL has ever been behind schedule. And yet he won't play in the preseason, and so we're just not going to know. And yet, you know, another spoiler alert, when I did my top 10 most talented running backs, you know, Le'Veon Bell's number two. And I felt bad about not putting him number one, because his feet are just awesome. I mean, he is an awesome player. If I have a chance, you know, if he gets bypassed by some people who are nervous about him and who take receivers instead, you know, I'm picking six or something like that, and I've got good reports about Le'Veon Bell, I'm taking him. And so for me, that would be a potential to be value for someone who I think could be the number one player. Ben.
Awesome. He is Christopher Harris. You can find him at harrisfootball.com. Where else can they find you besides the website, Mr. Harris?
They can find me on Twitter at Harris Football. They can find me on Facebook, Harris Football. They can find me on Instagram at Harris Football. I very deftly transitioned from all my ESPN handles, right? I had ESPN and everything, and I quickly rushed and got Harris Football as my handle for everything.
You've done a great job in branding, my friend. Great job in branding.
There are T-shirts available, and I'm not kidding.
I know. I've seen them. He's Christopher Harris. You should follow him for some fantasy advice. We'll have him through the year on our podcast because we love him. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jay. It's so fun, and you know I'm there anytime you want me.
All right, that was Christopher Harris. Some great stuff there from a fantasy perspective. If you're a fantasy player, you're definitely going to want to follow him at harrisfootball.com. And I believe that brings an end to Patriots Today. It was a good show. Glad you could all join us today. There's nothing else that happened this week, right, Greg?
Well, there's some minor news I think we should talk about, that's for sure.
Okay. I believe there was a big suspension on your team.
Yeah. So that's the, fun thing is we're losing our X factor on the offense from Rontavis Bryant for the whole year. And apparently to another what appears to be multiple weed or pot drug failures. And it's the multiple part is important because he went from skipping the 10-game suspension to the full season. And then the Steelers, I think midweek here, convinced him to drop his appeal for the suspension, which I thought was maybe the most interesting part of it, because I thought the players' union would insist that he would fight the suspension, you know, just as a order of operations to get through the process here. But apparently, I'm thinking Dan Rooney put his foot down and told him to drop the appeal. So that's going to be a huge loss. And it makes all their other offseason moves with bringing back Darius Hayward Bay and bringing in the tight end from San Diego. A lot more clear and transparent now.
Yeah, it's not a good suspension. It's certainly not going to help your offense that much. You went off on Twitter about the suspension, and then apparently a fan of mine, a pod trooper, and also Patriot fan, decided to have some words with you on Twitter. He's known as Eclectic Reason. We did ask him to email us, and he failed to send us the email. But to summarize some of his tweets, basically what he was getting at is, as he tweeted at us, "You guys think something stigmatized is so easy? It took Brandon Marshall forever because of this attitude. People don't understand depression. People are ashamed of it. Of course, we'd just be hearing about a kid in his third season not going to wear a badge. It usually takes forever because society puts up roadblocks, people who talk down, people who stigmatize and don't recognize how difficult and serious it is. Not a joke. And for people ashamed, pot is a common self meditator, better than booze, which people also use. And I get it. I see what you're trying to say there. But at the same time, you cannot allow an illness like depression, as bad as it is and the things that it does. I have people in my family that suffer from it. You cannot allow it to be an excuse. And to me, that's what it sounds like. Greg?
I agree. I mean, I don't know about Brian's history other than what's, you know, over the last couple of years. And all I know is that seems to be a troubled young man who turns to marijuana to solve his problems. And unfortunately, in the NFL, he can't play football and be smoking marijuana. So since he's not learning that lesson, whatever the cause of it, the smoking marijuana, it makes him unavailable. And as like all these legendary football coaches like to say, your biggest ability is availability. And he is now not going to be available again this year. And there is even some more interesting things. Last year when he was coming back from his suspension, he had served 4 games for the marijuana abuse. They held him out a 5th game, even though he was supposedly ready to go. And no one knows why that was. And, you know, maybe he doesn't have his head on straight. Maybe that's clear. And maybe he doesn't have depression. Maybe he does. None of that, to me as a fan, matters because he's not available for my team. I don't know what else to do about it, but say I hope he gets his head on straight.
I think the question for me about, the guy, depression or not, I mean, I wish him well and I hope he gets over that. I do wonder his circle of support, you know, his agent, his family, his friends. Clearly, it's an ongoing problem for a long time. You do wonder what sort of guidance and support he's getting away from the Steelers, and that's a little bit disappointing because clearly everybody can see he's got problems.
Well, and now you're talking away from the Steelers. We kind of alluded to it, but there seems to be some history of this going on. Greg, is this a systemic problem with the organization? What is with all these suspensions that we seem to see every year?
I don't know. With Brian and the support network off the field, supposedly after his 4-game suspension, he moved his mother to Pittsburgh to try to bring some continuity to his life, and that apparently didn't work. For Le'Veon Bell, who was in trouble previously, I think I'd like to blame the former or current Patriot, Blunt, which has a great name for this topic. But
he was a Steeler at the time.
Yes, he was. He was. But, you know, I think he was definitely a negative influence on Bell overall.
It seems he didn't seem to get into any trouble with the Patriots, but as soon as he goes down and plays with those Pittsburgh kids that are getting suspended all the time.
Well, let's ignore Blunt's long history of punching guys on the field and getting kicked off, you know, Tampa Bay giving him away for nothing when he was 1,000-yard back and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
that's back up in the Pacific Northwest, was it?
I believe it was.
Yes.
So
I tend to feel that it's probably just the Steelers' time to have a few of these guys. I think if you were to look on a longer term, probably that particular thing is it's happened across the league at all different teams at all different times and probably will do for the future. Steelers have probably just got a couple in a very short period of time.
We'll have James make us a scatter diagram.
Now, I have an interesting question for you guys. since Will Hill, also from the Ravens, just got suspended again, he's going to be serving a 10-game suspension. He got himself released now from the second franchise. Is the problem in the NFL here, do you guys think it's more of them testing for marijuana, or do you think it's just these very, very few players? I mean, if it's only 10 players, it's still very few that can't play by the rules that the rest of them have agreed to.
The latter.
So here's my understanding of the testing procedure for that, though, is that they give you a lot of advanced, well, maybe not a lot of advanced notes, but they only test you once during the year, and then after that, you're in the clear. So as I understand it, for guys who want to do it, it's pretty easy for them to avoid it. I would imagine the use is actually really ubiquitous throughout the league. I know for a fact there's several players on my favorite team who have been busted for it. Obviously, I won't name names. So I think it's more the policy. I don't maybe it needs to be addressed either if they're going to enforce it. I think their enforcement is bad and just kind of catches random people who are especially dumb about it. Or maybe the rules in general, now that's being legalized in some states, need to be taken a look at. I think it's actually much, much more ubiquitous than just these suspensions we see here and there.
Neil, any other news out there that caught your fancy this week?
Oh, I mean, we're still in the free agency scramble, aren't we? I think there's no real movement on the whole quarterback situation. I think we're still sitting there with RG3 and Fitzpatrick out there waiting for a call. Kaepernick probably waiting for a call more than anybody. And I was really interested to hear what the guys over there, what you're thinking of, where these guys are going to end up. Kaepernick, RG3, and Fitzpatrick.
It's definitely interesting to watch the game of chicken being played here, because clearly those guys have all seen what the quarterback market has been set at. Brock Osweiler helped set it, that transition tag. So Kirk Cousins, or the franchise tag, Kirk Cousins helped set it. And so those guys are looking for a big time payout. But at the same time, those teams are not willing to pay that amount of money for these particular quarterbacks. At the end of the day, it's going to be the teams that are going to have to blink, because they're going to end up going into the season with either Geno Smith at the helm, or they're going to end up going in the season with Mark Sanchez at the helm. And I don't think either of those two teams, the Jets and the Broncos, want to start the season with those quarterbacks as their starters. Now, I see it from all perspectives, by the way. I can see the team saying, well, I shouldn't have to pay you that much more money because you're not that much of an upgrade over the quarterbacks that we currently have. At the same time, Ryan Fitzpatrick made the Jets a legitimate threat and contender last season. And the fact that the Jets aren't going to pay him is kind of sickening a little bit. Now, the Kaepernick situation is a little bit different because you got Chip Kelly in there, and if Chip Kelly doesn't want you and you appear to be the best fit for the Chip Kelly system, then I feel really sorry for you, son. Honestly, I don't know what the heck's going on with the Colin Kaepernick situation, but if I'm the 49ers, I'm holding out for as long as I possibly can, because we know that the Broncos are definitely interested. They're just not interested in the price tag the 49ers have put on him.
Okay, so come the start of the season, where's Kaepernick and where's Fitzpatrick and where's RG3? I'm going to say Kaepernick's going to be in Cleveland.
I think Fitzpatrick will be in Denver.
Fitzpatrick in Denver. Kaepernick in Cleveland. So that means RG3 ends up in New York?
Sounds right.
Or is RG3 end up nowhere? RG3 end up looking for a job and waiting for that first starter to go down with an injury in the preseason?
I
think that's where RG3
could. He's not going to. Here's the problem with that approach, though. Like, if he waits for the rosters to be settled, then no one is going to have the amount of money available that he thinks he's going to earn. Right. So, like, when push comes to shove and rosters are, you know, people are looking to enter in camp, you know, basically, that's when RG3 is going to end up in like LA or somewhere that we're not necessarily expecting, but where he could be a potential upgrade And he end up signing there for less than what he really wants, but more than he would get if he waited until September.
Yeah, I can really see RG3 ending up in Los Angeles, you know, for the razzmatazz and you know, just a big name to come into the franchise as they start their new life in Los Angeles.
Going back to Arizona, Evan Mathis ended up signing in Arizona. So Arizona has made some moves here in the last week as well. I think they've definitely improved their team going into next season at this particular point in time. Andre Smith has signed with Minnesota. So the Bengals end up losing an offensive tackle and the Vikings end up gaining one. I'm going to look here quickly at the top 99 on NFL.com to see the guys that are still available. We've mentioned Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm still surprised. Still out there. Who's still out there, Neil?
Sorry, Russell Lokun, the Seattle tackle. He's obviously having a very deep and meaningful conversation with his agent to try and decide where he's going.
I think teams know that Russell Okung is made of glass and that he should not be a starting tackle on their team. In true NFL form, news broke after we recorded the podcast. Russell Okung has signed a 5-year deal with the Denver Broncos worth $12 million. So clearly John Elway didn't get the memo about Okung being made of glass. But I am surprised that Reggie Nelson is still available. Now, that's a guy that I would think would have been picked up at this particular point. And maybe it's a price tag thing for Reggie Nelson. I don't know. Honestly, all the other currently available unrestricted free agents are, you know, of the older type. You know, we had I had talked with Christopher Harris, who mentioned Alfred Morris. He thinks he'll eventually end up in Atlanta. Just connecting dots between Morris and Kyle Shanahan. Although that would seem like a very crowded backfield in Atlanta. So I don't necessarily know why that would be a good spot for him, but by connecting dots, it does make sense in that manner.
His best years were in Shanahan's system.
That is also true. Justin, did you have any news that tickled your fancy?
You know, not a ton. I agree with your assessment on the, I think at least they've had a pretty good week of the offseason. They also have re-signed Chris Johnson for their backfield, so they've got a pretty good backfield. I think Mathis is possibly an upgrade over Cooper at guard, so I don't think they're really losing anything in that trade, and just gaining Jones, which again, as an in-division rival, I'm not entirely thrilled about. My Seahawks have picked up a bunch of guys on both sides of the line, including a former Patriot, which we mentioned. What was his name? Saliga, something like that.
Silver Saliga.
So, you know, yeah, that's it. Who is it? I know literally nothing about that guy. What are we getting out of him?
He's good. Quality.
You're getting.
Oh, well, that's good at least. I mean, it's that weird week agency where usually the biggest names are gone. Russell Okung, I have no idea what's happening with him whatsoever. I think as it goes on, it's getting more and more likely that we come back, I think. He seems to go and visit a team, then they immediately sign a different tackle after he leaves. So I think his agent is representing him, which means that eventually he may just run out of options and end up back here in Seattle. So, you know, there's just little things like this. But one thing that I don't think we really touched on is the move that the Ravens made, picking up Mike Wallace. To me, that is almost the perfect quarterback wide receiver combination, because Mike Wallace is kind of like what you guys used to have in Randy Moss, where he's kind of a one-trick pony, that one trick being 9 routes, but he's really, really good at that trick. And Flacco's got the best deep ball in the NFL. His arm is ridiculous. Even when they don't complete it, they just tend to draw tons of really, really long pass interference penalties. I know we've mentioned it before, but if for one team that could potentially go from worst to first, look to the Ravens, especially with the issues that the Steelers are having with Martavius Bryant. I really like that situation there.
You're right about that, and the decimation of Cincinnati through free agency and like the perpetual just ineptitude of the Browns. Yeah.
All right. Last item on my list of things to talk about, as the show went entirely way too long today. Sorry, guys. It's free agency number three. And we did spend a lot of time on the Patriots. Is these playing rule proposals that have been sent in, and the NFL was kind enough to send out a press release covering these. There's 19 of them, and we will touch on most of them. A lot of them are related to each other, but we'll start with the competition committee would like to permanently move the line of scrimmage for try kicks to the defensive team's 15-yard line and allow the defense to return any missed try. That was something that they had already done last year. Now they're just going to make it permanent. And I think that was a good thing. Although it does suck when you watch an extra point get missed and you end up losing a playoff game. It's not fun. The competition committee the competition committee also would like to permit the offensive and defensive play callers on the coaching staffs use the coach to player communication system, regardless of whether they're on the field or in the coach's booth. I honestly feel like this is fairly stupid. If somebody wants to tell me why a coach in the booth should not have direct communication to a player, please speak now or forever hold your peace.
Is this the Ray Farmer effect with the texting? I'm just throwing it out there.
Number three, and this seems to be a matter of contention for some folks just because of the verbiage used, the competition committee would like to make all chop blocks illegal. Ron, our Miami superfan, notes that chop blocks are illegal and are enforced. What they should probably be meaning is cut blocking. And while he might be right, I am reading directly from the competition committee's rule proposal press release that says chop blocks.
Well, I mentioned that I wouldn't put it past the NFL to screw up something like that, since it's coming from the league office, but we established earlier that I will not be complaining about the league office on this podcast.
Can someone just clearly define the difference for us, what the difference between a cut and a chop is? Does anyone know for sure?
I don't know for sure. I think
is there something to do with
the waist, and a chop block is specifically behind the legs. I could be wrong.
I thought that both blocks were below the waist, but one is when you're engaged with another player, and the other is when you are a solo player and just getting blocked below the waist. Mm. I could be wrong as well. I don't know.
I think you're right.
All right. Next up is the competition committee would like to disqualify a player who is penalized twice in one game for certain types of unsportsmanlike conduct fouls. Honestly, I feel like this is a little bit of an overreaction, but perhaps a rule that has its place. But I mean, honestly, how many times do we see one player get two unsportsmanlike conduct fouls in a game? It doesn't happen that often.
Better yet, why would it not be at the discretion of the referee to eject a player? Like, why does it need to be two? Right.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
A guy
with
takes out a gun and shoots somebody in the knee, and like all of a sudden, that's only his first personal foul. We're going to keep him in the game because it's a rule.
Nice last Boy Scout reference
on that. You know, I worry that if you have that rule, then the refs, who are human beings and do get affected, are going to be iffier about handing out those second personal fouls for somebody who deserves it, because you know what's going to go through their head is, that's maybe a borderline personal foul, but this guy doesn't deserve to get tossed. I think that leaving the ejection entirely in the hands of the referee to make that call independent of other factors is by far the better way to go.
And I think we've seen over the years that the more and more prescriptive the league is with what the rules are in regard to what exists as judgment calls, the more questionable those calls become, right? And you can see it with what is or is not a catch. Like, why do we need to go through like an 87-step Vizio to figure out whether or not somebody actually caught a football, as opposed to just leaving it up to the discretion of the official?
By the way, that's not addressed in these rule proposals.
If we're on opposing teams and you get a personal foul, I'm going to try and draw another one out of you for the rest of that game and get you tossed if I have that option.
Yeah.
Hmm. The competition committee also would like to change the spot of the next snap after a touchback resulting from a free kick to the 25-yard line. Currently, you go to the 20. I don't necessarily see the reasoning why, but okay, fine. Baltimore has a couple of rules they'd like to amend. They'd like to amend Rule 5, Sections 3, Articles 1 and 2, which refers to changes in position, to require players to wear jersey vests with numbers appropriate for their positions. Good luck with that one, Baltimore. That's stupid.
Wow. It's been like...
Okay, wait, hold on. Wait, quick story. When I was in high school, we played against a football team player who actually did that. There was no rule that said he had to, but he was like a... like running back linebacker combination, and for some stupid reason he had a zip up jersey that went over his jersey with a linebacker number on it to take off when he was a running back. Dumbest thing I've ever seen. I do not need to see that on Sundays. People like getting all geared up for like tackle eligibles or something like that.
The dumbest thing that I ever saw, it wasn't my team, it was a different team, but the opposing team had two wide receivers. One was really good and one was just like a normal high school kid. And they were shutting down the really good one by triple covering him. So when they went in at halftime, he and the other kid swapped jerseys and they came back out and they were triple covering like the mediocre wide receiver and singling up like the All-State kid, which is hysterical because the All-State kid was like a 6'5" black guy and like was clearly not the same person.
The other rule that Baltimore would like to amend is 15, Section 2, Articles 1, 4, and 5 about instant replay to provide each team with three challenges and expand reviewable plays. There's a few teams that want to attack instant replay, including the Buffalo Bills, who would like to permit a coach to challenge any official's decision except scoring plays and turnovers. Let me see the other instant replay. Washington would like to subject personal foul penalties to instant replay review. Yeah, Washington
go ahead, Neil. The suggestion from Washington, that comes out of a play the Redskins had against Carolina where there was a really good drive going and then there was a personal foul thrown against, I think it was D'Angelo Hall, and it was just a shocker. And it was a real turning point in the game, so clearly we haven't got over that yet.
Washington would also like to eliminate the requirement that a team be successful on each of its first two instant replay challenges in order to be awarded a third challenge. Minnesota also agrees with that as well. Speaking of the Redskins, they would also like to eliminate overtime periods in preseason games. I say done and done. Kansas City has some interesting proposals. First, a legal forward pass. They would like to prohibit quarterbacks from falling to the ground, getting up and throwing a forward pass. I think that's fair.
He retires.
Sorry, Peyton.
The other rule Kansas City would like is the half distance penalty to add penalty yards to the distance needed to gain a first down. So I can think of, for instance, if you have the ball on your 10 and you get a personal foul, which is a 15-yard penalty, the ball would only move back to the 5, but you only need to go 10 yards to get the first down. They would like to make that 15 yards, I believe, or they'd like to add 10 more yards. I don't know. It's still kind of confusing, but I get what they're trying to do. Yeah, exactly. They're trying to make us do math off the top of my head.
Can you imagine the six being like 30 yards out of position because someone did the math wrong?
Can you imagine Antonio Cromartie trying to figure out dino distance?
Carolina would like to amend Rule 8, Section 2, Article 1, unintentional grounding to expand the definition of intentional grounding. Honestly, I don't feel that rule needs expansion. And then the competition committee added a few more proposals. They'd like to expand the horse collar rule to include when a defender grabs the jersey at the nameplate or above and pulls a runner toward the ground. That would obviously be a safety issue. They'd also like to make it a foul for delay of game when a team attempts to call a timeout when it is not permitted to do so. I thought that was already a foul. Apparently it's not.
To foul at college.
They'd also like to eliminate the 5-yard. They'd like to eliminate the 5-yard penalty for an eligible receiver illegally touching a forward pass after being out of bounds and reestablishing himself in bounds, and makes it a loss of down. Whatever. The final rule proposal is eliminate multiple spots of enforcement for a double foul after a change of possession. Again, not quite sure what that's in reference to.
What's missing here is number 20. That's what a catch is.
Right. Exactly. Catch is still not something that they are addressing, at least not this year, for the rules committee. So there you go. Rules proposals. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on Patriots Today. I still have more stuff to get to. Oh, my goodness. This is a jam-packed show. NextFanUp@gmail.com. That is our email address, and that is how we managed to acquire Chris, who is now our new Saints super fan. He sent us in his email. Really, I got to tell you, he got this more on his tweet that he sent that said that I've got this in the bag. I just liked his vibrato there. His bravado, I should say, not vibrato. I have no idea if he can sing well.
Yeah.
Let's mark that for a tease. And then he wrote in, as far as the offseason goes, we've not seen a lot of activity so far, but the people we have looked at tells me there's not a plan on us running a 4-3 or a 3-4 defense. It would appear the Saints are going to wait until the draft and try to design a scheme. By doing this, the Saints need to find as many cheap options to land on a scheme now. Try to sign players like a Craig Robertson at inside linebacker or Jason Hatcher at defensive end, who they've been linked to already. They also need to find at least one right guard so we can consider best possible available in the draft. And they did sign James Laurinaitis at inside linebacker. I don't know if that necessarily helps them in terms of landing on a 4-3 or a 3-4. But Chris is our new Saints super fan. Welcome, Chris. We do have an email here from Robert, who is applying to be the Buffalo Bills super fan. But Robert, you're going to have to wait until next week to see if you actually made the cut, as we await to hear from a few more Buffalo Bills superfans. And we have a former Browns superfan, that being Ben Chandler, who will be joining us, rejoining us as the Cleveland Browns superfan. So superfan positions going quickly. We still have openings for Buffalo, Tennessee, Philadelphia, Detroit, and Arizona. So there you go. Those are the superfan applications. Send them in nextfanup@gmail.com. You can always tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, check out what we write on our Facebook page. You would have caught that little ditty from Patrick about the Patriots offseason moves if you had gone to facebook.com/NFU podcast, or of course, if you just searched Next Fan Up in the little search bar on Facebook, our page comes right up. Gentlemen, I believe we've covered it all. Have we?
I got one breaking news item. One breaking news item for you.
Oh, we have breaking news.
If you ask Siri from the Apple phone, where is sadness? It responds with a picture of the Cleveland Browns stadium, the First Energy stadium.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. Good trolling, Greg. Good trolling. With that, I believe Jeff Fisher will let you know. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that this game is 4 quarters long.